Here, our first year today from Rabbi Ozer Glickman, who will speak on the topic of Bittul Berov in Halacha, empiricism versus conceptualism in Halacha. Rabbi Glickman received rabbinical ordination from Reitz. He has been teaching Talmud and Halacha to Smicha students since 2000. He has taught Halacha and American legal theory in the university's Benjamin N. Cordoza School of Law and is affiliated with its program in Jewish law and interdisciplinary studies. Rabbi Glickman received his B.A. in philosophy from Columbia University and has pursued graduate studies in philosophy and religion at the University of Toronto. He also holds an M.B.A. in finance from the Stern School of Business at New York University, where he was a university fellow. Rabbi Glickman studied at Yeshiva Merkaz Harav and has received rabbinic ordination from leading rabbinic figures in Israel and the diaspora. A resident of Teaneck, New Jersey, he and his wife Alana are the parents of six children, and the grandparents of three children, of three. It is now my honor to introduce Rabbi Glickman.
Gentlemen, you're hosting a barbecue. You've placed two hamburger patties on a tray waiting for space on the grill. You walk away for a brief moment, and when you return, you notice a third patty. A non-observant guest calls over to you. I hope you don't mind. I brought a hamburger of my own to barbecue, and I put it with the others. You don't know which one it is. What do you do? Opinions divided among the Rishonim. The Rosh maintains that you can serve all three patties, even to one man with a large appetite. The Rashba maintains that midrabbanan, they can only be eaten sequentially by one person. That's the opinion we follow the halacha. Others maintain that one patty should be thrown away, so that one does not vadai eat iser. We're interested in the majority opinion, the one that has been accepted, lahalacha. All three patties may be eaten by one person sequentially. In the ultimate homage to American culture, the three may be placed in a triple decker and eaten as one. The non-kosher patty has min ha-Torah been transformed into food fit for consumption by even the frumest of individuals. So this morning, we're going to investigate the transformation of that hamburger patty and what it means for our understanding of halacha in general. The source for Rov is in the first perek of Maseches Chulin. It arises following the investigation of a source for a related principle, chazakah. In the first of the Makoros prepared for you, we find the particular chazakah that prompts the Gemara to raise the question, how is that we rely on presumptions about legal status? Amar Rav Huna, Behema, Bechayeha, Bechezkas, Isur, Omedes, Ad Shivadalecha, Bameh Nishchata. Nishkata bechezkas heter omedes, aji vadalacha bamem mitrofa. Rav Huna declares that an animal remains in the last halachic state that we knew it to be. As Rashi explains, the animal starts out its life in a state of iser. Tehainu aver minachai. It remains usher until we have positive information to the contrary that it became heter. The chazakah works then as a kind of halachic inertia. An object in a state of isur remains isur until we know otherwise. An object in a state of heter remains heter until we know otherwise. There appears to be a logical flaw in this argument. We do have intervening information about the animal that's been shechted. Even if we don't know how the shechita was done, the animal's no longer living. How can we leave it in its former state? So the Rashba explains what Rashi might mean. The chazakah that the meat was in cheskas isur, it doesn't matter whether the isur is still the same isur or whether it's a different isur. In fact, the cause of the meat's isur, it no longer pertains. It was usher because it was live flesh. Now it isn't. To follow up on this notion of machzikin may isur le'isur, a good place to begin is the Shav Shmaisa in the fifth Shmaisa, whose topic is im machzikin may isur le'isur. The major point for our purposes is that this is a rather precise reading of the Gemara. The animal is becheskas isur, meaning it itself is usur, not in a chazakah of a particular isur called Eiver Min HaChai. The Rashba has his own explanation, which doesn't require machzikin me isur le isur, and is therefore much simpler. Its shortcoming is that it requires him to introduce a new isur. The animal starts out in the chazakah of being eina zvucha, of not being shechted. Until we have information that it was properly shechted, it remains in that chazakah, in that presumptive state. This keeps the animal in a chazakah of a particular isur, and not in the presumptive state of general isur, as the Rashba saves Rashi. But whether the chezkas isur refers to the status of the piece of meat or to a particular isur itself, the point for us is the same. We may make presumptions about halachic matters from incomplete information. Its consideration of just these kinds of presumptions in Perek Kama de Maseches Chulin that launches the Gemara on an investigation of Chazaka in general and its cousin Rove. If you think about it, by the way, if it's not familiar to you, it's really an astounding concept that we can, without information, make assumptions or presumptions about the halachic status. It's the kind of thing that my mother, Alav Shalom, never would trust me in the kitchen. So I don't want to hear chokhmas. Don't tell me Shav Shmaisa, that's Isur. I don't want to hear about it. In our second Makor, the Gemara asks now about Chazaka. Minaha milsa damar rabbanan, okay milsa achezke. The rabbi's statement that we should make presumptions about halachic status, where does it come from? Rabbi Yochanan suggests that it's to be learned from Mitzora, specifically when Tzaraas is suspected to have infected a home. Amar Kra, the Yotza HaKohen Min Abayis, El Pesach Abayis, V'Skiras Abayis Shivas Yomi. Kohen leaves the house, goes out through the entrance, and then shuts up the home for 7 days. The Gemara says, Dilma Adinafik va'asa batzar le'shi'ura. Fulfilling the Torah's command to leave the house and only then effect the hesker that completes the process requires that the Kohen at some point lose sight of the blight of the wall. During the seconds that he's closing the door, and the blight might be out of sight, requires the Kohen to make a presumption, doesn't matter for how short a time, about the shear of the tzaras on the wall. This can only be, the Gemara tells us, Mishum da amrinan oke achezke. We make the presumption. We rely on chazaka. The Kohen has to assume that the size of the tzaras on the wall doesn't shrink when it's out of sight. That's the chazaka. See Tosis for the obvious question. Why isn't this safek tuma b'rshus ha'yachid d'sveiko tame? This isn't our topic this morning. Ve'en kan makom lahari. So where are we? We have a Torah source that requires reliance on a legal presumption, namely, to presume that Saras hasn't disappeared in the seconds that it's unseen between the Kohen's exit from the house and it's being shut up. Continuing in the Makor, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov objects to the Limud, demonstrating how the Kohen could leave without having to lose sight of the Tzoras. V'dilma kigon shiyatza derech achorav, dechachazi le kinafak. Perhaps he's walking out backwards, the way the Kohanim take leave of the Dukhan, where they walk off the steps of the Bima, allowing him to see it the entire time as he exits. There are, of course, two ways that we could understand Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. He may be just objecting to the source, or he may be objecting to the concept. He may just have attacked the derivation from Taras because he doesn't think it's compelling. Or he may, in fact, reject the notion completely that we ever rely on a presumption when we have incomplete information. It shouldn't be surprising to you that we find both approaches in the Rishonim. The Ran, for example, reads Rav Acha as suggesting loopholes in the derivation, but still saying we can rely on a chazakah. We can still make presumptions about halachic status. The overwhelming majority of Rishonim, though, follow Tosfos and the Rashba as reading Rav Acha Bar Yaakov as being the other side of the coin regarding chazaka, that he rejects the principle entirely. Because we're interested in Tosfos and the Rashba here, because the Rashba is the figure that eventually forms the halakha, we won't bother to argue the interpretation, but we'll concede so that we can understand their shita and rov. You can see from the shakla vitarya that follows in the Gemara that the Gemara does not leave Rav Acha Bar Yaakov undefended. Abaye says, there are two tshuvos to you, Rav Acha. I can answer your challenge to the limud of chazaka, both of which are refuted by Rava. And remember, Rava is always one of the major factors in the establishment of the halacha. If I had to say, there are three amoraim who play the greatest role in psak. When you see them in the sugya, make sure to take them quite seriously. They are Rava, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav. All three, in their generations, play the formative role in the development of the halacha. Even when the Gemara cites a brisa, Tanya Deloka Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, an explanation's offered on his behalf, as fantastic as it may be, a chain of people until he gets to the house, this one tells this one, this one tells this one. The Gemara's content to end the sugya with two standing in opposition to each other. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, maintaining that we can presume an object remained in its last known state as long as we have no positive information to the contrary. And Rav Acha Bar Yaakov finding no basis for the principle and his Lishitas Rova Rishonim rejection of the notion of Chazaka. Now we get to the critical part of the sugya. While on the topic of logical devices, like assuming things to be unchanged without information to the contrary, the Gemara asks a similar question. Mina hamilsa damor rabban and zil basar ruba. This principle that the rabbis enunciated, follow the rov, where's this from? Where indeed, the Gemara says. Minalan. It's explicit in a pasuk, Acharei Rabim Lahatos. Why are you asking? When the Sanhedrin sits to make a decision, the Torah says it needn't be unanimous. They must follow not the most powerful Dayan, not the oldest, not the wealthiest, and even the knowledgeable in Torah. They must follow the majority view. It's all about numbers. Why ask where this is derived? It's beferish in a pasuk. The principle is explicit in Sanhedrin. The Gemara responds, this question wasn't about a rov called a rov de Issa Kaman, a rov right there in front of us, but of the other kind of rov, the rov de Lesa Kaman, the rov that is not present. Now, for those unfamiliar with the terminology, a simple explanation. We make two kinds of determination about the majority in halacha. In the first kind, we have a set of objects or people in front of us. We know the breakdown of the set. If there are X objects in the set, Y objects have one characteristic, and X minus Y objects do not. Let's apply it to Sanhedrin for the mathematically challenged. There may be 23 dayanim in a capital case. It may be that 18 vote to indict and 5 vote to acquit. The majority is easy to determine. You got 23 judges right in front of you. You count the votes for yay and the votes for nay. Simply need to count. That's a rov de Issa Kaman. The rov is right in front of me. We have all the objects in the population under consideration in front of us. We make a simple determination how many there are of each variety, and we calculate the rov if one exists. Because we have a principle of ein beis din shakul, we never have an uneven number of dayani, and we can always be guaranteed to have a rov and never a tie, leaving certain technical considerations of beis din out of the mix for now. That's the first kind of rov. Let's say that it's in statistical terminology, we can use such. Torah mada, mada lamana Torah. Let's use mada to secular knowledge to explicate the Torah. We have a sample, and we know the distribution, the underlying distribution of the sample. The underlying distribution of the sample is 18 and 5. Sample's right in front of us. We're making no conclusions about anything in the world in general. All we are is making conclusions about the rov de Issa Kaman. The rov right in front of us. The second variety of rov is when we make a judgment about a single object or person based on an evaluation of the entire population of sub objects or people, even when they're not present. For instance, we may know that rov behemos ksherosheim, most animals of a kosher species are in fact not trefos. That is, they have the proper physical characteristics or viability of a healthy animal, so if they're properly shechted, they would be fit for consumption. Here, kosher doesn't mean a kosher species. For that, Chazal used the term behema tahora. Right? Behema tame is an animal from a non-kosher species, not one that was metame lemesi. Rov behemos ksherosheim. Rov mitsuyin etzel shchita mumchim hein. The Gemara is full of observations about the general populations. To use statistical parlance again, a rov de lesa kaman makes an observation about the entire population of beings or things, not on a finite sample that we have in front of us. We have a single instantation, and we want to make a judgment about it. Now we're ready to consider the examples that the Gemara gives here in this source. For the Ruba de Issa Kaman, the Gemara gives Sanhedrin the obvious example, because it's the subject of the Pasuk. We have a certain number of Dayanim who vote aye, and a certain number who vote nay. If the ayes are the majority, then the ayes have it. The first example is also classic that the Gemara gives. It appears throughout Shas in this and in other contexts. In simple parlance, it's known as the case of the Teisha Chanuyos, the 9 stores. The situation is a simple one. There are 10 butcher shops in the town on the main drag. 9 sell Bisar Shchuta, meat that was properly shechted. The 10th sells Bisar Nevela, meat from a kosher animal that wasn't properly shechted. There's no way to tell which is which by looking at the meat. A package of meat without identifying marks is found in the street. From the point of view of simple probability, there are 9 good outcomes, 9 positive outcomes, out of 10 total outcomes. There are 10 stores, 9 of them would be good. The package might come from any one of the 10 stores. The probability it came from one of the good ones is 90%. Theoretically, all we need is a rove. 5 out of 9 would have been enough. Pitzkei Tshuva in Siman Kuf Tes, which talks about this category of Iser, mixing where there's no liquid, Yavesh B'Yavesh, says even if it's slightly more, it can just be a little bit more than a rove. Let's circle back, though, to a critical question for our systemic understanding of halacha, not just for this particular case. The Gemara in Kiddushin stipulates what one should do if we have a chazaka that would indicate one thing and a rove that would indicate the opposite. Then what do you do? Which trumps which? The conclusion there is that a statistical majority, a rove, is adif, is stronger than a mere presumption. Now look what the Tosas here do with this principle. In the third source, the itema, kevan damrin and zil basar chazaka, kol shekein basar ruba, de ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. Tosfos asked, since we already know Chazaka, since we spend so much time clarifying the Yalfusa from Tzaraz Abayis, why do we need a source for Rove? The Gemara tells us that Rove is a stronger logical device than Chazaka. If I know Chazaka from the Pasuk, then I surely know everything that's stronger than it. When the Torah tells me, you must make presumptions about halachic status from your last known information, you must leave things as you last knew them to be until you have more information, then the stronger proof of rove should require no source. If you can rely on a chazaka, kal v'chomer, you can rely on a rove. So Tosfos has a simple answer. Remember Rav Acha bar Yaakov? He objected to the derivation from Tzoras Abayis, which Tosfos takes to be tantamount to rejection of the principle itself. Yesh Lomar, de la Rav Acha bar Yaakov bai, de lo kim le chazaka mikra. So Tosfos says the whole reason why the Gemara is asking about Rove is only for Rav Acha bar Yaakov. No one else would require it. If they accept the limud of chazaka, then they don't require the limud of Rove. The question about Rove is only asked for a minority opinion. Otherwise, we wouldn't need a source. Once we learn Chazaka, we've thereby learned everything that logically flows from it. Boy, that seems to be a very big chiddush. Let's see the Rashba's response, and then the recasting of Tosfos in the Tosfos HaRosh in response to the Rashba. You have them in front of you. In the fourth makor, had the kaiman lan ruben v'chazaka ruba adifa, hani mile basar div shita lan does lina basar ruba, ava ad lo kaiman lan iaz lina basar ruba, olo lo mochinan la michazaka de emar basar chazaka z lina v'lo basar ruba klal. We can only discuss, the Rashba says, the relevant strengths of chazaka and rove. Basar de'ifshita lan dazlinim basar ruba. After we already know the principle of rove, the Gemara in Kiddushin merely tells us, how do you referee these principles when they come into conflict? The Gemara's question in our sugi here, min ha'mil sedamu rabbanan zil basar ruba, is logically prior to Ruba v'chazaka, Ruba Adif. We have to tie these two principles down, Rove and Chazaka, with airtight sources, before we can then debate which one takes precedence when they come into conflict with each other, when they offer contradictory conclusions. Aval adlo kaimalan, iaslinan basar ruba. Olo, lo mochachinan lame chazaka, de ema basar chazaka aslinan velo basar ruba klal. Until we've incontrovertibly established, the Rashba says, the source for rov, it's senseless to question what to do when they conflict. Because there's always the possibility that we follow Chazaka and don't follow Rove at all. Whatever its strength, logically, qua Chazaka, Torah is not simple logic. The Tosfos HaRosh doesn't think that the Rashba has dealt fairly with Tosfos. I want to read all three, then I'm going to double back and we'll make sense of it. The fifth Makor. Ve'itema kevin shelamadnu dazlina basar chazaka kol shekein basar ruba dekaimalan ruba v'chazaka ruba adif. Tosfos start with Rashba's question. With Tosfos' question, Tosfos Rosh starts with Tosfos' question. V'yesh mitartzim, that's the Rashba, and the Rashba answers the hainu basar diyadinan dazlina basar ruba. Oh, it's only after we know that you follow a rove can we ask which one comes first. And look what they say. V'la nehira. The Rashba doesn't make sense. Din nehi de yad inan dazlina basar ruba. Min alan de ruba adif. El esvarahi. V'hu adin below pranami. Skvaldik. Deciding that rove has greater validity than chazaka is perforce a logical determination. It must be based on svara. And this is where his answer falls apart, the Rush argues. Since it requires Svara, then once we're using Svara, we don't need a Pasuk at all for Rove. Since it requires Svara, why look for a source? This can't be just a matter of refereeing to Pasukim. A conflict, if you will, I'll use my Cardozo language, between two positivist laws. Two psukim and the halachos that they convey. Because the act of refereeing requires svara. Once you're in the realm of svara with rove, you don't need a pasuk at all. It's rather clear to me that Tosfos HaRosh has cleanly captured the point of the Tosfos we cited in the third makor. Why? Let's go back now and look at the second half of that Tosfos. Ulamai de mefarish Rabbeinu Chaim. Rabbeinu Chaim, obviously one of the Balei Tosfos. Ulamai de mefarish Rabbeinu Chaim de had de ruba adif mechazaka lo misvara el yalfina mi para aduma dazlina basar ruba alfa gav de ika chazaki geneged arov okay gavra shemazin ala becheskes tame asi shapir hacha. Rabbeinu Chaim derived the principle of ruba adif mechazaka from a verse in the Torah, from para aduma, where the point is that the Tosfos say that their problem of why ask for source for rove disappears once the relative validity principle also becomes a source. Asi Shapir, it follows well if you learn like Rabbeinu Chaim. So if you take rove adif mechazaka out of the realm of svara by tying it to a pasuk, then you haven't introduced Svara at all, and then it's just a question of three laws. It all follows well. Rove has a source, Chazaka has a source, and the connection between the two of them has a source. You might ask, why do you need a connection if you have, why do you need a source if you have a connection? Okay. Which is why the Rashba would definitely respond in the same that he would. Say the same thing he said before. The reason that Tosfos HaRosh says, that Tosfos is saying here that the question of the Gemara doesn't make sense to them is because you brought in logic. Once it's logic, there's no need for a source. This is clearly what Tosfos HaRosh is saying as well. If you're using logical principles for Rove, including establishing its dominance over Chazaka, then Rove doesn't need a source. Chazaka has a source, we use logic for Rove. I have the distinct impression that the Rashba would just turn around and say what he said before. You can only talk about the precedence or the dominance of one principle over another once you've established a source for both principles. Now, this is a very important case. Whenever you run into a case like this, what do we have? we find two Rishonim talking at such cross purposes, as if they're not even in the same conversation. They're unable to have a coherent exchange. That means there's something more fundamental going on here. When we encounter a case like this, there must be a machlokas in a foundational principle. There's a svara chitzona that under the surface that divides the two sides and makes them unable to communicate. Here's what the Achronim propose as the underlying svara that divides these two perspectives. It all has to do with the nature of Rov. Is Rov a din like Chazaka, derived from a pasuk? Or is Rov also a logical principle? Is it just that the Torah tells us to follow the majority, or is it more? Is it that we actually clarify the nature of the object or person in question by assuming that the majority situation pertains? This may be a difficult distinction to assimilate, but it has powerful explanatory power, so I want to spend a little more time on it. For the Rashba, the halakhas of Chazaka and Rov are positivist laws. In the language of Ronald Dworkin, in the language of the Achronim, they're a hanhaga. They're a direction derived from Psuki. They can come into conflict because they're not intended to describe reality, just commandment. There are plenty of situations in which the last known information we have about something conflicts with what we know about the majority, where Chazaka would tell us one thing and Rov would tell us another. In such cases, we don't know which way to go. In such cases, we exercise svara in our observance of mitzvah. Svara mediates mitzvah. Here's the example from Kedushin where the principle of Rov versus Chazaka is delineated. We find a child standing by some dough that is truma. And there's some dough in his hand. You find the child is standing by the table. The dough is sitting on the table. And you see the child standing there and you find some dough in his fingers. The last thing that we positively know about the dough is that it was tahora, right? We didn't see the child touch it. We left truma dough there. If we would establish its status according to its presumptive state, its chazaka, the chezkas tahora, then the dough has to be considered tahora. However, the Gemara observes it, knows human nature, says most children, when they see dough, they dabble in it. They stick their hands in it. We have a Rov that would say burn the truma and a chazaka that would say not to. The Rashba's explanation is that the logical principle that Rov is stronger than chazaka mediates the contradictory messages of these two Torah mitzvahs. The Tosus would say that once the Torah teaches Chazaka, it teaches everything that Chazaka logically entails. Are there clues in the Sugya, in Chulin, that can assist us in finding our way between these two approaches? I'm going to turn to the Shari Yosher. Moran Rabbi Shimon Yehuda Shkab Zeker Tzadik Livracha, one of the giants of the previous century, the developer of what became known as the Telzer Derech in learning. He actually taught in this very yeshiva briefly in the 20s. A member of the Moetzes Gedolei Torah. My Rebbe, Rav Zvulun Harlapshli, to share with me a mesorah of stories related to this giant sojourn here in New York. A mesorah that he required from the Rav Zatzal. The Shari Yosher contributes enormously to our understanding of Rov in his brilliant analysis of our Gemara and Chulin. And you'll find a selection in the sixth Makor. Remember, the Shari Yosher says, that the Sugya recasts the question of source for Rov. What did the Sugya say? you were asking me where we learn Rove from. Acharei Rabbi Mahatos, obviously. No, we're not looking. Acharei Rabbi Mahatos is the source for Rove to Issa Kaman, like the nine stores and the Dayanim of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara reworked the question and said it's directed towards Rove de Leisa Kaman, like the Rove that most children eventually reach puberty and so are permitted to perform Yibun. We don't know whether the child will be able to fulfill the requirement to perpetuate his brother's memory through reproducing. Nevertheless, the Yibum is effective even prior to pre-puberty. Since we follow the Rove of children in the world, a population not present in front of us, but the statistics of which we apply to the single case. This is the Rove for which the Gemara debates the sources in the lines that follow our selection in the first Makor. Writes the Shari Yosher, Hine mi pashtu sashas nire de inyan haro shel teisha chanuyos yesh lilmod mikra d'achari rabim lahatos veruba d'leisa kaman leka l'lemelach mizeh. Those general observations about a population, the Shari Yosher says. The Sugya says, don't learn them from Acharei Rabbim Lahatos. They're a different set of opportunities entirely. The cases where we have a defined set of objects or people with a known distribution of outcomes, that we can learn. A Rove de Issa Kaman, that we can learn from Acharei Rabbim Lahatos. But the Rove de Leisa Kaman, the general observation about the population of children, the general observation about behemos, the general observation about people who practice shechita, if they have different sources, they must be different halachas. They're both called rove, but they function in different ways and hence require different psukim. So how does a general observation about the population of children in the world differ from the Rove of the Sanhedrin or the Teisha Chanuyos? Umashma lichora, deruba de Issa Kaman, who Rove shemachriya umivarer yoser as a safek, mikamo ruba de Leisa Kaman. Initially, the Shari Yosher says, we're drawn to a distinction regarding the strength of proof. We would perhaps think that a Rove de Issa Kaman, where we know the facts on the ground, offers greater logical proof than relying on the general population in the world for single case. I know the general population in the world is 65% women, 35% men. I pluck a single individual out of the street. Do I have a 65% chance that that one individual is a woman? Would matter. I'd need to know some facts about where I took. If I happened to take that person outside, plucked one person outside the base midrash of YU, chances are it's a man, not a woman. I need some facts, additional facts, in order to apply Rove. V'chein mitaretz hashas b'teirutz achad b'yivamos dav kuf yutes afilu tema rabbanin ki azle rabbanin basar ruba d'isa kaman ki onteisha chanuyos v'sanhedra aval ruba d'leisa kaman lo azle rabbanin basar ruba. In fact, the Shari Yosher argues, the Gemara itself proposes this at first in the sugya in Yivamos, where it suggests that only a Rove to Issa Kaman is effective. If it weren't more of a Mevarer than a Rove to Leisa Kaman, if it didn't have greater logical power, then the Gemara wouldn't even have had a Hava Mina to make the suggestion. V'nire li le'anu yistati. Levair inyan zeh. Dihine be'mes b'teisha chanuyos. Mochos b'sar shchuta. V'achas b'sar nevela. The Yalfinun Mikra d'acharei Rabim Lahatos. Im no marshahu mishum beiru makriya inyan amasa bimtzius. Kashe ma'od lavin eze dimayonhu inyan shel teisha chanuyos l'rov dayanim. But the sugya gives two examples, the Shari Yosher says. The dayanim and the nine stores. Let's consider the dayanim first. With dayanim, we're clearly tempted to say, you got a consensus, they must be right. We're clearly tempted to say that we follow the majority because it's more likely that they got the Metzias correctly. Two heads are better than one. The more judges arrive at a particular verdict, the more likely it is to be correct. There's strength in consensus and wisdom too, etc., etc. If we make that leap, though, the Shari Yosha says, how do we explain the nine stores? If we say the point of the Sanhedrin example is that the majority are more likely to reach the right answer, to figure out what actually happened, then what can we say about the nine stores? How does that describe anything related to reality? It's like the distinction, if you will, between descriptive statistics and explanatory statistics. Descriptive statistics, all we do is data mine. We take all the things in front of us and we say, we figure out what the numbers are. We say, okay, we'll make a prediction. In explanatory statistics, we make a model of something and we know how it works. We have reason to believe how it works and we model to see if the numbers work. The sugya gives those two examples. It doesn't work with the second one. If we say that the point of the Sanhedrin example is that the majority are more likely to reach the right answer, to figure out exactly what happened, then what can we say about the nine stories? How does that describe anything related to reality? Uv Dibi Shlomo, he anticipates your question. I know what you're thinking. Dibi Shlomo b'dayanim, yesh tam lomar derov dayanim, shemechavnim l'deya achas, yoser korov lomar sheim kivnu l'halacha, min amiyut acholek. It's right to think, maybe, that the majority got it right. In fact, so the Chinuch explains the reason that we follow the majority. When his paragraph, he always says, mitame a mitzvah, why we do something. Aval b'teisha chanuyos, im no mar al pishikul da'aseinu, di yoser karo b'mtzius, shebasar nimtza hu miteisha hashkutos, ein beiru zed domer l'shikul adas. We're not making the same kind of calculation, the same kind of consideration with the stores. We're just playing probability. With the court, with the Sanhedrin, we're assuming that there's something about the majority of minds. Here we're just playing numbers. We're data mining. There are nine good stores, one bad one. The meat had to come from one of the nine. How do we know that it came from one of the nine? As the Shari Yosha will argue below, we know nothing about the way the meat left the store. We're missing information. In fact, what we're doing is turning the rov de isa kaman into the rov de leisa kaman. And the Gemara said there are two different kinds of rov. Read what he says. Va'o de inyan ze lomar, shal pi rov harabim, shachokim im ayachim, mechavnin ala emes, yoser, who rove the lesa kaman, kemo rove behemos ksheros, rove name ilonis, shehu inyan masha anu misharim she yoser matsui li yos kain mi asher lehipuch. When we explain the Sanhedrin example as one of likelihood, when we say that it's more likely that the majority gets it right, we're making a conceptual shift. We're turning the rove to isa kaman into a rov de leisa kaman, because we're making observations about facts in general. We're saying that usually the majority gets it right. That's a rov de leisa kaman. Our only reason we would conclude that the majority gets it right is because from experience we've seen that the majority usually is mechaven to the right thing. I would suggest to you, by the way, that human history suggests otherwise. We're implicitly saying that the majority usually hits the Metzias. We've observed many cases and come to that conclusion that you can usually safely go with the consensus. Rabosai, that's a rov de leisa kaman. We're making a judgment about the general population and not the specific one in front of us. So how does it work then, this rov de isa kaman? Elenire sha'ainyan b'teisha chanuyos, hu ke'inyan din harov hamachriya b'dayonim. V'hu dekevan shabasar balkorcha nifrash me'achat me'aeser chanuyos kol chanus v'chanus goremes din al habasar l'sapek es adin al habasar. The explanation of the nine stores works in the following way. It's like the majority in the Sanhedrin. Since the meat, there are only 10 stores that had to come from one of them, we count up the factors that are right in front of us. We have 9 factors that say good. We have 1 factor that says bad. We do a counting. That's what the Rov de Issachamon is. Each one of those stores is right in front of us and participates in the calculation. What Acharei Rabim Lahato says is, make a counting of the factors de Issachamon. They're in front of you. V'nimtza da'alabasar ika tishat tzadim ha'gormim tzad heter v'tzad echad ha'gormim tzad isur. V'Torah amra acharei rabim lahatos, follow the majority of factors at play in any decision. Dekein hu hadin b'dayani sha'amra Torah sha'adin ha'yotzei me'arov aleinu la'sos kein. Because that's what the Torah told us. Just like by the dayanim, we're not trying to describe reality. The Torah just said, take the factors as they exist in front of us and enumerate them and then follow the majority. So with the 9 stores, no more likely, no less likely where the package came from. We're not playing probability. It's not a mevarer. It's a hanhaga. It's gezeiras hakasuv. It's a positivist law. Kach And so the same law that comes from the Rov Chanuyos is the din of the Sanhedrin. Even though, look at his last words, af shem bimtzius leikakan beirur klal. Even though in reality, for reality, we have no clarification of what the real answer is. And so, Rov is Gzeira Sakasuv. It's the Torah's mitzvah. It may mislead us, and by the way, that's one of the traps of Torah Amada, that we find an analogous concept in the secular world, and we immediately make the sin of translation, considering it completely equivalent to its analog in the Torah world. We can use it to enlighten, but we also must exercise caution. Now we understand the example of the hamburger patties. Acharei Rabim Lahatos. The Torah has commanded us that when there is a set of objects, we establish the status of all of them, if we have incomplete information, by counting. It's not a matter of probability as to which patty is the non-kosher one. We do not have to throw one away if it isn't a question of probability. The non-kosher one, al pi haTorah, has been transformed by the Torah into the majority. So is the force of acharei rabim lahatos. The halacha is a conceptual shift, al pi haTorah, not an empirical distribution of the facts on the ground. Be pleased to entertain questions or comments. Yes, sir.
There's a recent discussion going on in the Jewish community today about all the nefesh. There's others that say that kulat nefesh, one can take a mother organ and inject it to a human being, another person, so that you can save that person's life. There are others that say that you shouldn't do that because it desecrates the body and it's an autopsy, it shouldn't be done. What are the kind of factors would you use in discussing this issue? Because I think some of it has to do with growth. There's no really clear statistical analysis as to how successful many of these transplants are. So in making the decision, what should the approach be?
I'm going to have to give you a very unsatisfying answer. I'm going to say that ein poskin, ein atami posek halacha bifnei arav. My Rebbe is right above us, a few floors above us. He's the one that you should discuss this with, Rav Tendler Shlita. So this is his expertise, not mine. I'm sorry, I'll give you some ideas afterwards, but if not, I would turn to my Rebbe for that kind of a clarification. Yes, sir. Sorry?
Yeah.
Okay, that's it's a. If I have special reason to believe that there's another argument that I can make about the store, I can say that each store is kavua bimkomo, right? With the stores, right? And then we know that the Gemara says that kol kavua kemetzal mexadame. So the other argument I could make about the hamburger patty is that it's a binary, it's a 50-50 proposition. It either came from there or it didn't come from there. Longer discussion. But when we have three items that are together in a tarovas, it's clear that the two are mevatel the one. I had in the back, I'm sorry. No, he says, don't let it become a rov to lesa kaman. In other words, the Gemara gave it as an example of a rov to isa kaman. So don't explain it, don't inject anything in it that'll turn it from a rov to lesa kaman into a rov to isa kaman. That's his point. So if you explain it as being that they're mechavnim ela emes, then you've turned it, you've shifted it from a rov to isa kaman, which he in the end explains as mere counting, to a rov de lesa kaman, which is some observation about who usually gets it right. Once you inject explanatory power, you've made it a rov de lesa kaman. Is it better? Say again? It means it's a different kind of rove entirely, and therefore it's not what the Torah was talking about. The Torah in Acharei Rabim Lahatos only talked about numerical probabilities. It didn't talk about global principles. And so the Gemara goes on then to suggest Parah Aduma and a few other cases that might serve as the source for rove de lesa kaman. What we did is we cut the Gemara off because we're really interested in the function of rove de isa kaman, and that's why I cut it off. Yes, sir.
What about Davashu B'Minyan? You have the three patties. Each one is
really individual. Davashu is, just for those who haven't learned Yerideya, it's a rabbinic exception to the laws of Bitul. And what it is that things that Mishum Chashivas, that have a certain kind of importance, that we would sell them by the number, like eggs, like Davashu B'Minyan, might not be... Batel. But my impression is that hamburger meat, I've never, the boys now, I have some Talmidim here who know that I say that I don't know anything about the kitchen since I'm not a very helpful husband. But I under the impression that hamburger meat is purchased by weight, not by number of patties.
Well, you can buy by patties too, but still, it's one side of the individual.
No, then anything would be Davar Shebe Minyan. So Davar Shebe Minyan are only those things that would be sold by the number, that have such chashivas that you would sell them by the number, and you'd be aware of the numerical factors. But even there would only be Midrabanan, it wouldn't be Midna Torah. So the Torah would still be saying that it's Batul Midna Torah. Yes, sir? It's a decision of the Sanhedrin, so they participated in the decision. So the Sanhedrin becomes a logical unit that made a decision, right? The same way that the Supreme Court may issue minority opinions, but the decision of the Supreme Court is the decision of the majority. Yeah. Okay? Thanks very much for your attention.